Welcome to Perspectives. I'm Joan Herman. My guest today is Molly Pringle, who in January became the first permanent director in nearly 2 years of The Harbor, a nonprofit organization based in Astoria that aids survivors of sexual and domestic violence and stalking. Pringle most recently served as director of operations for a crisis line serving all genders, Call to Safety, in Portland. The former birth doula holds a master's of public health with an emphasis in management and policy from Portland State University. At the time of Pringle's hiring, the agency previously known as the Women's Resource Center had had three directors since the retirement of longtime director Pat Burness in 2012. Established in 1976, The Harbor serves men, women, and teens over the age of 15 in Clatsop County and the surrounding areas. Its services include conducting initial interviews with clients to assess risk, offering medical and legal advocacy, and providing emergency shelter when needed. It also operates the Deja Vu Thrift Store in downtown Astoria to support their operating expenses. This program was pre-recorded. Welcome to the studio, Molly.
Happy to be here. Thank you, Joan.
Well, you've been in the job just a month. How are things going for you so far?
Well, I love Astoria, and I'm so happy to be in this community. So that's really been helpful in adjusting to a new job. The team at the Harbor is incredible. The board has been very supportive. So I feel like everyone is invested in making the Harbor successful, and that's really helped me during this transition, what with all the information that's just sort of flying my way, and I'm just starting to get my bearings, and I feel like now I'm really ready to dig in and make this positive for the community.
What prompted you to take the job of moving from Portland to Astoria?
Well, I grew up in rural Arizona in a small town, and I've lived in Portland for the past 12 years, and it did feel like home, but I was always searching for that tighter-knit community and the magic that can come from small town and more rural settings. And I always felt like Astoria was unique in its values among the coastal cities and its voice. And I was always sort of had my eye on this region, and the barriers were around housing and finding work that was meaningful and would support me. And here everything has fallen into place, and it just feels like it was meant to be.
That's wonderful. Those are big challenges for a lot of people just moving here or wanting to move here. So I realize you've only just gotten your feet wet, but what are your initial goals that you have for yourself and for the organization?
Yeah, my goals for the Harbor really, I think, reflect the goals of the team in general, and that's to continue to be a reliable resource for survivors in Clatsop County. And I think through, like you said, our most recent periods of transition and a little bit of instability, one thing that I don't think has sort of suffered is our services. We've always been committed to showing up for survivors, and we are a survivor-led organization. And what that means is that we work under an empowerment model. And this means that we believe when folks have resources and information, they know themselves best. They know the best decisions to make for themselves. And we're there just to support them in their own decision making and self-determination. And from what I understand, this hasn't been compromised in our recent period of transition. At the same time, I do see that some staff, to sustain our services at that level, have maybe entered into the danger zone of the classic nonprofit burnout. And my priority right now is to support our staff in making sure that they have the resources to continue building their skills and being able to do this work. So working on basic things like schedule revisions that just make more sense for folks who are on our team. I'm looking at benefits and all of the things that, you know, really help folks thrive in their work, especially when you're working with trauma, you know, being able to take time off unexpectedly and things like that. Folks were just a little bit overextended recently and weren't able to do that. So my main priority right now is supporting our staff so that our services can continue to support the community.
How big is this staff?
We have about 7 staff members right now. Some are various part-time positions, and there are a few full-time positions. We're looking to expand our staff soon. Last Saturday, we had our volunteer and events coordinator position close. We have some great candidates, so we're in the final selection process with that position, and that will really support the organization and staying connected with the community, because what I've noticed so far is that there is an outpouring of community members who are interested in engaging with the Harbor, supporting our work with their time, their skills, even their money, and we need someone to be able to sort of harness that community energy, so I'm hopeful about that hire. And one more thing, we'll be expanding our staff because our confidential shelter that has sort of been in the works for a bit now is slated to open in June of this year. And that shelter will be able to house up to 12 individuals at any time, and we'll be hiring folks to support the operations of the shelter.
Will that be just women or men and women?
The Harbor supports survivors of all genders, and our shelter will be the same. Obviously, we understand that most survivors of domestic and sexual violence are women, and living in even a safe shelter with a male resident may be re-traumatizing to them, and it may be a safety concern. So we'll work with residents and we'll work with the community. We have other options available if it feels like a different housing option would be a better fit for survivors of other genders and things like that.
Now, the safe house has been in the works for quite a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, we did have, I'm not sure who might be familiar, but there was a large capital campaign at the Van Dusen property downtown. And once we got into that building and realized the sort of breadth of the renovations that were necessary, the project fell through. However, we've always had this alternative property that we had considered operating as a shelter space. And when the Van Dusen property fell through and we sold it, we then felt like we had the financial resources to turn this new property into the safe and confidential shelter that's needed.
Wonderful. And I know, the Van Dusen property is now been taken over by the Astoria Makerspace.
That's right.
Which is a good use for that as well. Mm-hmm. Is the safe house in the Astoria area?
It is. And it is in close proximity to downtown, so residents at the shelter will be able to easily access other social services. They won't be estranged from their friends and family in the community. So we're hopeful that we'll sort of toe that line between keeping it confidential for safety reasons and also keeping folks connected with their community here.
And will there be a time limit for how long people will be able to stay there?
Yeah, most domestic violence shelters, unfortunately, because the need is so high, there are time limits. My goal is for us to never let someone go from shelter without a plan for stable housing when they leave. So our initial stay will be 30 days, and of course we'll be flexible. And like I said, as a survivor-led organization, the survivor will have some say into how their stay goes.
You mentioned that you just closed on a volunteer events coordinator position. Is that a new job, a new position at the shelter, at the Harbor?
It is not. It was a position that was sort of filled by another staff person who sort of just took up the role because she saw that there would be a lot of benefit to the community in having someone doing that work, but it wasn't filled full time. So the position now is dedicated to that work. It is a full time position. And so I think there's so much potential there with just that stability and dedication.
How is the harbor funded?
We have a variety of funding sources. Largely, we have state and federal grants. We do get support from the city of Astoria. We get support from the city of Seaside and even Cannon Beach. Obviously, we rely a lot on donors, individual donors from around Clatsop County. We rely on private foundations. We just received a wonderful $20,000 grant from the Collins Foundation. The local United Way of Clatsop County is amazing and supportive of our work as well. Windermere Real Estate just granted us a $2,500 grant. So, you know, it is a lot. It takes a lot to sort of harness these resources and to do the work of building relationships with donors and funders, but you know, we make it work.
And you rely on volunteers a fair amount, don't you also?
Well, that is one of the things that I'm hoping will change with our volunteer and events coordinator. We do have a team of volunteers who are ready to engage with us, and that looks like possibly doing direct service, answering our 24-hour crisis line. It might also look like supporting us with some administrative work. So doing filing, helping us do outreach to various community partners. There are many roles that volunteers can fill. And right now, our team just doesn't have the structure to really utilize the people power that's there.
So once the new staff member's in place, that will improve, I would imagine.
Yes, I hope so.
Can you tell me, is the problem of domestic violence and sexual abuse of children and stalking any different here than it is in a large city?
That's an interesting question. I think that survivors in more rural settings do have unique challenges. One of what we know about domestic violence is that it's about an individual asserting a pattern of power and control over another. And in rural settings, one of the ways that we see patterns of power and control come out is through isolation. And we, you know, I've noticed that survivors in Clatsop County may be completely cut off from their friends and family in a way that survivors in Portland may not be. So that's a concern, and it's really challenging to sort of break through that isolation and reach survivors who might benefit from support.
How do you go about doing that? If somebody is isolated,
yeah.
How do you even find out about them necessarily if they don't call you?
Right. That's one of the challenges that I think comes more with a cultural shift and a community shift. And I don't think that there's one thing that's going to be the answer to that. But I do think that when communities, even when you're in a rural community, most likely you do have some connections. You may have coworkers. You may have relatives nearby, even your distant neighbor that you sometimes run into down the lane. When your community does not tolerate violence, they'll notice when you're isolated, and maybe they'll check in on you. And so for me, it's about the sort of undergird of a very strong community that can notice the signs of domestic violence and step up and, you know, check in on folks and provide options and resources there.
If you're just joining me, you're listening to a pre-recorded interview with Molly Pringle, who in January was hired as the director of The Harbor, a nonprofit Astoria-based organization providing aid to survivors of sexual and domestic violence and stalking. I'm Joan Herman on Perspectives on Coast Community Radio. Before the break, you were talking, Molly, about people being more observant of their neighbors if something seems not quite right. What would you recommend someone do if they sense something's not right?
Well, first, I would like to say that the harbor has a 24-hour crisis line, and I think that the name crisis line may be somewhat misleading. You don't have to be in an active, violent situation for the crisis line to be supportive to you. And we are here not just for survivors, but we're here for friends and family and community members who care about survivors in their lives. Our crisis line number is 503-325-5735. And if you're a community member who has noticed a change in a relationship that has you concerned, if you're noticing mood changes, personality changes, substance use changes in someone that you care about and you think it may be related to interpersonal violence, you can call our crisis line and talk with a skilled advocate anytime to understand more about options and how you might be able to link that person with supportive services through the harbor.
What other services are available besides the safe house that will be coming in June, you mentioned, and the crisis line? What kinds of things can survivors access here in a small community?
Yeah, well, I think for most survivors who walk through our door, they're looking for someone to listen to them and believe them. And unfortunately, that's just not a common experience for survivors when they access other resources or even when they talk with their friends and family. And when survivors come to the harbor, we absolutely listen to them and we absolutely believe them. So that's a huge resource in and of itself. And when you feel like you're being respected in your identity and experience, so many things come up as possibilities for how you can get your needs met. So some more practical resources that we often refer folks to are legal resources around restraining orders, stalking orders, sexual assault protective orders, and things like that, or helping folks navigate family court issues. And while we are not legal aid services officially, we can definitely talk with survivors about what their experience might be like when they access those resources. We have a co-located advocate at DHS, and that means that she spends half of her time at the self-sufficiency office, and she can connect with survivors on site there to provide services and to check in and just say, hey, the harbor has all of these other resources. And I've been talking about when survivors walk through our doors, and I just wanted to let folks know that our offices are at 801 Commercial Street, and we're on the lower level, and you can come in for drop-in advocacy anytime between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. And we do have other appointment times available by request. So again, call our crisis line if those hours don't work for you. Unfortunately, we know that's probably the time a lot of folks are at work, but we can make arrangements with you to get your needs met.
I know those are new offices for you. They're the former law offices of Snow and Snow. When did you move into that location?
Well, I started in late January, and I think we had just finished up moving, and we're still unpacking.
I would imagine.
Yeah, but the space is beautiful. We have a children's play area, so if you drop by and you need childcare while you're visiting with an advocate, we can absolutely set that up for you so that your child doesn't have to be re-traumatized by hearing you talk about your experience. Our drop-in advocacy center, we do have some safety precautions there in terms of having an always locked door and having privacy film. So, you know, once you're in our offices, everything that you say is absolutely confidential. Our advocates have, by state law, what is called privilege, which means that anything you share with them is held in confidence and we can't share that with anyone else. So we hope that you all understand that you can feel safe and secure when you're talking with an advocate.
I'm curious if you've noticed any change in light of the Me Too movement with survivors feeling more willing to share their abuse, believing that it might be taken seriously.
Yeah. I think the Me Too movement is really unique. And one of the things that is interesting about it to me personally is that it really is referred to as a movement at this point. I think a lot of things that have to do with change feel like just these fleeting blips, and then it goes back to the status quo. And with the Me Too movement, it feels like there is sustained energy behind it, specifically because it's about individual voices coming through, but it reveals the way that domestic and sexual violence is sort of ingrained in certain communities and it becomes a norm in certain communities. So, for example, in Hollywood, a lot of actresses came out and said it wasn't just this one man, it was this producer and this person. And I read that there was a survey of a lot of women from Hollywood who said 85% of them had at some time experienced sexual violence or harassment in the workplace. And the Me Too movement sort of holds communities accountable to say, you may not know that this is happening among your peers. And because of community norms that might allow for misogyny and other kinds of oppressions, even things like racism and ableism, these things are not tolerated and we have to create change together. So I do think that there's power behind it. I think that survivors do feel more empowered to share their stories because of the movement, because they feel like they're part of something that has potential to make real change. And I think it's up to us in this region to make sure that when folks do step forward and share their experiences, that we do that bit around accountability and around creating community norms that do not tolerate oppressions.
I mentioned at the beginning of the show that you started your professional life as a birth doula.
Mm-hmm.
What prompted you to make the switch into social services and in particular working with survivors?
Yeah. Well, I don't know that I ever fully made the switch. I was just at a friend's birth last month and it was wonderful. So it's still very close to my heart.
You're still doing it a bit.
I think so. But one of the things I'll share quickly was I was thinking of becoming a nurse midwife. And when I looked into that field more specifically, I realized that it would be very frustrating for me to work as a healthcare provider in an oppressive system like the healthcare sort of complex. And all of the policies that make nurse midwives not be able to care for the folks that they're working with were really frustrating to me. And I got kind of sidetracked by all of the policy and everything behind it, and I wanted to go explore that. And that's why I went back to school for health management and policy. And I know I just said the healthcare system is an oppressive system, and some folks might think that the nonprofit industrial complex is oppressive, and I agree with that. And working at the Harbor, I think I try and push back against that by never compromising on our services and always being survivor-led and empowerment-based.
Do you have any specific programs you'd like to add to the Harbor that are not there yet?
Yeah, you know, we have a teen outreach specialist, and she has some great connections going with local high schools. I think the prevention side of things is really appealing to me, and I know it's appealing to our work our staff, because ideally we would put ourselves out of work, right? It would be great if we didn't need advocates for survivors because there was no violence. So working on prevention is something we have our eye on.
Do you go into the schools at all?
We do, yes. We go into health classes at Astoria High School. We have a relationship with Warrenton High School, and we've done some limited outreach there. This focus is relatively new for the organization, so we're still growing into our relationships with the schools and how we want to best reach younger folks in the community.
Do you have a lot of teen survivors?
No, I wouldn't say we have teen survivors who are regularly reaching out to us. We know anecdotally that there is violence that teens are experiencing, dating violence, and they may also be experiencing trauma by witnessing violence in their homes. So we're here for teens in that way as well. But I would love to see our reach with teens be a little greater and for them to feel like we're an accessible resource to them.
You talked earlier in the show about burnout and how that is a very real problem for staff.
Mm-hmm.
How do you yourself stave off that despair, since you obviously are on the front lines of seeing sometimes the worst of society?
Mm-hmm. You know, bubble baths and chocolate only go so far. So I really love to connect with nature. I have a really supportive partner who helps me sort of decompress from my days, and spending time with friends and family and celebrating the work that we do also helps me sort of stick with it. And while sometimes it seems insurmountable and like endless work, coming together in my community to acknowledge the work that we're all doing, that helps fuel me and keep me grounded.
Does the Harbor have any upcoming events that listeners would want to know about?
Yeah, actually. We have an open house, sort of community meet and greet, so that folks from the community can come in, check out our advocacy offices, and meet our awesome team. That is Monday, March 21st from 4 to 6 p.m. And after the open house, those who are interested can join us in walking to the city council meeting, where we will declare April Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
Well, thank you, Molly. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank my guest, Molly Pringle, who in January became director of The Harbor, a nonprofit organization providing aid to survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, and stalking on the North Coast. Thank you again, Molly.
Thank you so much.
Established in 1976 and formerly called the Women's Resource Center, The Harbor now serves all survivors of domestic and sexual violence, including teens, in Clatsop County and the surrounding areas. It provides initial interviews with clients to assess risk, offers medical and legal advocacy, and provides emergency shelter when needed. If you know of someone who needs help, the office is located at 801 Commercial Street in downtown Astoria. The crisis line number is 503-325-5735, around the clock. This is Perspectives, and I'm your host, Joan Herman. Support for this show comes in part from a grant from the Clatsop County Cultural Coalition. Perspectives was engineered today by Graham Nystrom. The show can be heard every other Friday on the stations of Coast Community Radio. You also can find show podcasts on the station's website. If you have an idea for a show or would like to contact me, you can reach me at perspectives@coastradio.org. Thanks for listening.